All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the Rehoboth Social Podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing a local podcast. Good morning. It is January the 11th, 2023. Good morning, Gavin Furlong. How's it going, buddy?
Doing pretty good, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing great. I think we were just sitting here recovering, right, from the 2 weeks off for Christmas from our kids.
Yeah. It's nice to be back into the normal flow this week. For sure.
Well, the routine's good for kids and routine's good for adults.
Yeah, for sure.
So, good morning. You reached out to me because you are going to put on a little event.
I am, yes. So, March 4th, I'm putting on it's called the Blue Ribbon Runathon. It's a fundraising and awareness campaign for colorectal cancer.
Nice. And you experienced a little of this? Was this part of your story?
It is, yes. So I'm 40 now. At 38, I was diagnosed with colon cancer. Mm. And, you know, the short story is I got really lucky. My body told me something was wrong. I told my doctor. One thing led to another. And I had it removed before it could really spread and, you know, would need chemo or anything like that. And I just want to do what I can to bring others in the community up to speed on this disease, what to look for. You know, so hopefully they could catch it early as well and have a positive outcome like I did.
Well, we definitely don't want the short story. We got an hour here.
All right.
We want to hear, because I do think it's interesting. You know, you're 40, is that what you said?
I'm 40 now, yes. I was 38 at the time.
I'm 54. I mean, we're getting older. Yeah. These weird things are starting to happen. Old age is creeping in.
Yeah.
And I think, and now, you know, we have so much information out there. It's like you get one little thing going on and then you're diving into, you know, whether it's WebMD or, you know, hundreds of different books. Mm-hmm. And now we're diagnosing ourselves and freaking out. And so what can we talk about a little bit of the story about what happened? Because I've worked next to you for 12 years and I did not know about this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it certainly was a surprise. So in my particular case, you know, my body told me something was wrong, and I guess to get into the details, I had some blood in my stool, right? Not normal.
No.
But just to kind of put it out there for folks, you know, if you do have bleeding in your colon, it's not like you cut your finger and there's liquid blood visible. Mm. You know, when I would have a bowel movement, there would be like kind of like a rust colored streak in it. So it's not something that immediately jumps out at you.
It's
but
not
I did
like a
notice.
Mass murder took place. It's
no.
It's, and it's sometimes.
That would be a problem too, but no.
Oh my God. Well, and usually, like, so, you know, obviously this is an interesting, you know, it can be a little bit of a uncomfortable conversation, but listen, we need to have it so that there's people out there. But, like, you know, it can also be really dark.
Correct.
Blood and stool can be dark or rusty.
Correct.
It doesn't look like, you know, like you said, this bright red blood. It has a different look to it.
So. Right. And at first, probably like a lot of people do, if you see something different, you know, I made an excuse for it. Like, oh, well, I kind of changed my diet, or it might be this, it might be that, and I kind of ignored it for a while. And then it would pop back up. And my wife, who's a medical professional, she doesn't let me get away with stuff like that. So, you know, quickly we told my doctor, which led to a lab test of the stool to confirm there's blood there. And there was, you know, and that led to a specialist going to a gastroenterologist to do some more testing. And eventually that was a colonoscopy. Usually these start as polyps, which people who have had a colonoscopy may have had them removed. And oftentimes they're benign, but you want to get them out of there because they can turn cancerous if left for too long.
Right.
So this particular polyp had been growing for a while. I saw some pictures of it after the fact. It looked pretty gnarly and nasty. And they did remove it, but when they went to test it, it was cancerous, and the margins weren't clean. So those cancer cells had moved into the wall of my lower intestine. So
when you say a margin, because I've heard a lot of this through, like, when people have skin cancer, you know, there's a margin where a doctor needs to start removing skin until they find a clean margin.
Correct.
Where there is no more of those cancer cells. Because, unfortunately, you know, I've had, in the hair business, I see, you know, I'll see little things. I'm like, I don't know, this looks different. You know, even though I just saw you in 6 weeks, I do think you should get that checked out.
Right.
And several clients have had skin things on their head or, you know, on their necks and have had to have them removed. Obviously, doing it earlier, smaller margins. Mm-hmm. You know, you wait, bigger margins, bigger affected areas. So definitely several reasons, obviously, to try to do this earlier, keep up with this, or if you do have concern, don't procrastinate. Just go get it checked out because you'll probably live, but, you know, you might as well get your margin smaller. I've seen some big, I had a guy when I was at a salon over in Lewis. He had to have a big portion of his nose taken out. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
But they actually built the whole thing back up with an ear and some other parts.
Mm-hmm.
So he looked good. But, yeah, spare your margins.
Well, the big thing is you want to get it out before it spreads into any surrounding tissues.
Right.
You know, so in my case, my surgery, which was still fairly extensive, 6 to 8 hours or so, you know, they're taking out a piece of my lower intestine, what's really called your sigmoid colon, which is kind of where your lower intestines turns into your rectum.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to take about a 12-inch section of that out and then stitch it back together so that hopefully it all, you know, your body will adapt and it'll start to work like it used to, which took some time, but it did. But the good news is, you know, it hadn't spread into any of those surrounding tissues. They don't really know that until they go in for surgery, which just means that I didn't need any chemo or radiation or anything like that.
Now, did you notice anything else other than the blood? Like, I mean, were you feeling tired?
No, that's the part that really caught me by surprise, because honestly, at that point,
fantastic.
I was probably the fittest I've ever been in my life. So then to get the news that, hey, you got this bad thing happening inside, and I have no, you know, other than seeing this blood in the stool, there were no effects. You know, I didn't have any stomach pains or discomfort or anything like that.
Well, like I said, we've come a long way as far as some of these things. And, you know, I think what they start asking you or suggesting to get the colonoscopy, I think at 50.
Yeah, so I would like to talk about that some. So that has typically been the recommendation, is once you're 50 years old, have a colonoscopy done. If everything looks good, you're probably not coming back for 10 years. The CDC, usually if you have a polyp or some history, they'd want you to come back
sooner. I think I got mine done, and I think they said they'll see me in 5 years.
Oh, well, that's good.
I'm not sure it's 10.
Okay.
I think it's, that's what I was saying. I think it's 5. But.
Okay. Now,
unless you have an amazing, you know, experience, and maybe they're like, you know, 10 years is fine.
Now the CDC is recommending that it be done at 45 for your first. And some insurances are covering that, some aren't. I think things are adapting. But the bigger trend that, you know, I'm concerned about is if you look at colorectal cancer figures over the last couple decades, it's actually going down, which is good news. But that overall decrease is sort of disguising some other statistics that you have to dig a little deeper for. And that is that in young adults, like where I was, the frequency is actually going up and the severity of these cases that are being detected is going up. So overall, we're doing a good job. And that's really because older adults, 67-year-olds, are getting their screenings done and they're not having as many problems as they used to be. But younger adults are having more issues. Yeah. So even at 45 years old, you know, that could be too late for a lot of people. So the big thing is, you know, to pay attention to your body, to be your own advocate. If something seems out of sorts, if your bathroom habits change, if you have stomach discomfort or constipation that lasts for more than a couple of days, tell your doctor about it. Just don't ignore it.
Right. Does this come from anything, or is this bad luck?
Well, we're not quite sure, but it looks to be environmental, and they're seeing similar trends in other, you know, wealthy countries like the United States is, and they think it's, you know, maybe our sedentary lifestyle or a lot of processed foods, not a lot of fruits and vegetables, things like that. You know, I grew up in the 80s and 90s. I personally didn't eat a lot of fruits and vegetables as a kid, and I know probably just about everything else I ate was processed. So it's looking like it has more to do with our diet and our lifestyle now than necessarily like a genetic thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can't blame it completely on that. I definitely know when I grew up, I did not eat very well.
Yeah, right.
I'm a little older, but it was a different time for some reason. I mean, we seemed like, I thought we were eating okay, but now when I look back, I'm like, ooh, we were not eating very well. Well, you know, what more appropriate way to shine a little light on something like this than a good run-a-thon, right? Mm-hmm. Because I am, I guess I met from doing, I think I did your wife's hair. I think that's what initially got us together.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been friends for a long time, and I've always thought you were a great guy and love all your energy. And one of the things that, working next to each other as we've become friends, we started, you know, a relationship through running. And I was running pretty hard at the time. You were not running, I don't think, at all when we first met.
No, I had to go back and kind of think about this. So I think I started running it. It'll be 5 years ago this summer, I think, that I did like my first 5K.
And I'm not going to say I inspired you, but I definitely talked about running a lot. And you were like kind of not really, you kind of were thinking about, I don't really remember what brought it on. But all of a sudden, here you come, Gavin the Runner. And I remember running with you. I'm like, geez, Louise, this guy's really going crazy. And that's, we've had a lot of fun through running. You definitely had the moments where I think we've all, if you're a runner, have had where you're really, you know, putting some time and some distance on the road.
Yeah.
I've personally backed off of that a little bit. I'm enjoying a little less running.
Yeah.
But you've had, let's share your experience. I always say, if you want to learn about yourself, go for a run.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is important that we talk about the colon stuff, but running is huge, man. And I just love to hear what your thoughts and your experience with it has been, and what a great tool to use to shine some light on this issue.
Yeah, like I said, I just kind of went back and looked at this because I was kind of curious. So what really got me going was my son. So he was 4 years old at the time and kind of stumbled into a 5K with my wife.
Okay.
You know, and he's just four. He just kind of waddled his way around and, you know, jogged a bit.
Just a four-year-old running a 5K.
Yeah, but, you know, he enjoyed it and he wanted to come back. So for about a year, I sat on the sidelines and just kind of watched him do that, you know, and develop as a runner, I guess, as much as you could at 4 and 5 years old. And my wife would run with him.
I was going to say, I think your wife was a little more involved with his running.
For sure.
Early on.
So my daughter was probably like one or two at the time. So, you know, I would be hanging out with her while they were racing. And that was fun for a while. But I quickly realized that if I let, my son's name is Nolan, if I let him keep developing, you know, and I just sit on the couch, you know, in another year, he's going to be faster than me and I'm never going to be able to catch him.
Right.
So that was honestly, silly as it sounds, was kind of a big motivator. I wanted to be able to run with him, keep up with him, maybe be a little faster than him. So I got into it as well, and the family just kind of got hooked. It became a big part of our life. And me specifically, I was always sort of drawn to longer distances. Mm-hmm. You know, I think like a lot of people, you do a 5K and then it's a 10K. And then, you know, I think the next year was a 10 miler and a half marathon.
I think you got obsessed.
Well,
I did. Wasn't there a 50-mile run somewhere on the horizon at one point, or even a 100-mile run? Wasn't there a training going on for something?
Yeah, so
preposterous like this.
In, I think it was 2019, probably on watching YouTube or something like that, I stumbled across some of these ultra marathons, which videos of these people doing these events. And really just an ultra marathon is a distance longer than a marathon, you know, more than 26 miles. Usually they're run on trails, oftentimes in the mountains, so there's a lot of up and down. It just seemed like an adventure to me, and I was really drawn to that, and it's something that I wanted to work towards. And I did a couple of those. I did 250K, which is 31 miles. That's sort of like the entry-level ultramarathon, and I did 150-miler. And then I was in the process of training for 100-miler when I got my cancer diagnosis.
Right.
So that, you know, sort of set me back for about a year till I got to the point where I felt like I could run like my old self.
I feel like you were having some foot issues too or something. There was another, like you were feeling it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's some things, this gets kind of into the running weeds a bit, but there's some things about the way that I run, which, you know, I guess isn't the greatest for for a lot of mileage. And there are things that I'm working on, you know, but we can all get better.
Well, are you past that now? Or do you still have that somewhere on the horizon you'd like to do again and continue the ultra marathoning?
Well, I am, and that's kind of where this run-a-thon comes in. Now, my body has changed. I'll be the first to say that. And I can't push myself or push my heart rate in the way that I could before. Mm. But as long as I can, an ultra marathon kind of fits the way I'm tuned now. As long as I can keep my heart rate long enough, I can go all day long. You know, but racing like a half marathon or racing like a marathon, getting my heart rate up that high, that would kind of put me out of sorts for a couple of days.
Yeah. Well, I have loved, you know, that's how I quit smoking. In 1999, I quit smoking cigarettes and I started running.
Yeah.
And I always just had a lot of admiration for people that could run and just the freedom of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was what I think is the best part of it, is that I literally could step out of my front door and start running.
Yeah.
zero things blocking me from proceeding on with my journey, you know, where if it's, I got to drive to the gym, or, I got to do this, or get to the pool, it's like, all you have to do is just go out your front door and start running.
Yeah.
And to me, that's one of the greatest things about it. And as a person that runs, not as much as I used to, I try to run at least once a week, mm-hmm. you know, if I'm just doing a couple miles, if it's, first, I had to just be okay with whatever I did. Right? Mm-hmm. There used to be, I sort of could get caught up a little bit, like, oh, if I'm not doing 6 miles, why bother, right? And, mm-hmm. and I had to enjoy it a little bit more for the experience, a little bit more for the serenity, the spiritual side of it.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I tell you what, it does help you with going to the bathroom. Yeah. I mean, that was a whole lot to get to that point.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can go, like, especially through Christmas, I wasn't eating bad. I just was stacking weird food on top of weird food. Yeah. And I started feeling really bloated. And I go, I got to go for a poop run. And just took off running. And, you know, a mile or two into it, you're like, I'll be back. I got to use the restroom. And everything, you know. And you mentioned it, that sedentary lifestyle. There is something about this bouncing. And I just saw it on a reel. Some lady was like, me running through the park with my kids. And then, like, oh, me going to run to the bathroom. Like, there is something about keeping active. And, you know, that rhythm of the bounce. I don't know if it kind of moves things along. I don't know the exact mechanics of it. But it is key.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you're 40. I'm 54. At 54, I'm like, oh, this is a good thing, right? You know, pooping, let's keep it moving.
Yeah.
It's key.
Yeah, I will admit, this route that I'm running for the run-a-thon is, I enjoy it, and the mileage works out, but it's also kind of designed around, well, where are the bathrooms? You know? When you get older, that becomes really important.
Well, I remember running with James, and I was, you know, one of the things that happens when you run is you begin, I shouldn't speak for you. For me, I begin to come up with inventions.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever do that? You're running like, I should invent that. Like,
yeah.
Or I should write that movie. Mm-hmm. I always say running makes you a poet, a lyricist, you know, a screenwriter, whatever it does. But I had this invention of a camouflaged toilet paper dispenser that you mounted on a tree in the woods, and you would know where it was because, you know, there have been moments where nature calls,
yeah,
and there is no bathroom around.
Yeah. Yeah, it's back to what you said about the serenity of it. That's one of the things I enjoy most. I do some coaching of cross-country teams, youth and
well, I was
in high
get
school.
To that.
Oh, okay. You know, but those kids will say, you know, they'll see that, oh, you did like a 3-4 hour training run, you know, last week. And like, what do you listen to music? Like, what do you do? And usually I don't. It's just, it's kind of nice to be in your own head to sort things out, you know?
Well, and I did want to get to the fact. So JDS has been on the podcast before. He is the coach at SAS, mm-hmm. Sussex Academy, cross-country.
Mm-hmm.
For just the... Is there two teams or is it one?
No.
It's I'm just from 6th to 12th.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. There is a middle school team.
Okay, there's a middle school team.
And technically there's a separate boys and girls team, but we all practice together.
Right.
The high school level, at least.
So my son, David, who is a senior at SAS, he has been running on the cross-country team, I think, for 3 years? 3 or 4? I know he started before you had come on, but... I think he'd initially gone out for soccer and didn't make the team, so he went up for running. Mm-hmm. That's just how he is. But point is, he's been on the cross-country team. Jay Diaz, who owns Print Coast to Coast, awesome guy, big fan of Jay, has been the coach and has brought you on. I don't know, is this your first or second year as the assistant coach?
Yes, and first.
First year as the assistant coach for Sussex Academy. I think you've been an amazing addition. I really appreciate you doing what you're doing. I guess it's a volunteer opportunity. I don't even know how that works, but thank you. I know you've been a great addition for Jay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're an analytics guy. You know, you're a paper guy. You like to see the numbers.
Yeah.
Which I think, and Danielle, your wife, who is the actual school nurse at Sussex Academy,
mm-hmm.
huge fan of Danielle. Done her hair for a long time, watched her grow through her career, watched you guys grow together as a couple and as a family, and always had a lot of admiration for you guys, and just you're like Team SAS, man, and I love it. And your son, he's almost mascot. Is that a fair or just?
He's okay with that term. Yeah, he's the team mascot.
Yeah, he's sort of just the team small guy that just kind of hangs out. Love him. Just a lot of great stuff. you know, you're involved in this run-a-thon, you're an assistant coach for the local track team, you're a runner yourself, you've experienced this issue with the, you know, the colonoscopy stuff. And so what a better way to spread the word than through this? It's what you do. Mm-hmm. And you're a camping guy, which I love too. You're a van camp guy.
Yes.
We'll have to do another podcast on that, because yeah, that's I think we all want to build a van and take off camping.
Yeah, it's last summer we went cross country, took 2 months, which was great. And we got home and everyone was speaking to each other, which I consider an accomplishment.
Yeah.
And I've just started planning a trip for this coming summer. But yeah, that could be a whole nother episode.
Dude, I think the West is going to be fantastic this year. I mean, the amount of rain that they are getting over there, I don't know if you've been following it, but my gosh. I mean, obviously, you know, it's not a great scene there right at the moment, but mm-hmm, I'm imagining the West is going to be very beautiful next summer, mm-hmm, with all the rain. But so the how's that been, being the assistant coach, being involved in that?
It's been great. You know, I've told the kids this. They didn't know it at the time, but, you know, I was still recovering from my surgery. It had been, you know, a year and change at that point when I started running with them. So I had been running on my own. But, you know, prior to that, and I still do, I also coach with the Seashore Striders, which is the local youth cross-country team.
Right.
And I have a lot of fun with that. So that's elementary grade kids.
And you got involved with that because of your son.
Because of my son, right. Yeah. But when you make the jump from running with elementary age kids to high school cross-country athletes, like, this is night and day. So, you know, now I'm really having to challenge myself to keep up with them. So that experience, you know, just being out there on the trails with them this past summer and during the season, it really did a lot to build me back up physically and mentally, because I wasn't quite sure if I'd ever really be able to get back to kind of where I was before. So they had a big hand in that, just kind of having me around. And, you know, if any of them listen to this, I think they'd admit it might be weird that this old guy was out there running with them at first.
Yeah.
You know, this old coach, when they probably just want to talk to their friends. But, you know, honestly, that meant a lot to me and really helped me get back on my feet, so to speak.
Okay, you're 40.
Yeah.
Okay, you're not old, not so old. Stop. Let's not digress or degrade ourselves here, whatever the word is. You're a young guy.
Well, I'm old to a 16-year-old kid, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, you are. That's perfectly normal. Well, and, you know, one of the questions I wanted to ask you and get your thoughts are, is that, you know, you're seeing a lot of people that, you know, like David never ran cross country. David had gone on a run with me before at some point, maybe just a mile or two. You know, as a guy that runs, I didn't have the same, I won't say luck, I didn't have the same situation where my son was already wanting to be a runner. You know, right. I was like, come on, run with me, guys. And they're like, right. Eh.
Yeah.
I mean, they would bike with me as little kids. David would, you know, I would run and David would bike alongside of me. And that was good enough for me, just as long as I'm out doing something right. But what's it like when you have a youngster or a young person that wants to come in and start running, but it's hard, right? It's not, a lot of opportunities to quit.
Yeah.
It's tough. How do you keep Chloe? Chloe's a great example. You know, she's new to the team. She's, mm-hmm, you know, she's not really a person you would think, you know, she's not super tall. She's not super lanky, not like a David, you know, mm-hmm, but she's in there and she's, mm-hmm, and one of the coolest things that I found that day, I think it was the last meet, was I think Chloe was running. You know, may have been last, I don't know. But the whole team came out and supported her. I got a little emotional. I think it was also, plus David, it was his last run.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool to be involved with that. How do you keep young people that are like, I don't know if I really want to do this, excited about it? Or do you share stories of when you had the beginning? Or what do you do? Is that part of a coaching position?
I'd have to give credit to Jay for that, for the kind of family style atmosphere that he's built, you know, and after a meet, it's not just celebrating, you know, the top five or seven runners or who had a PR. It's really about acknowledging everybody, you know, even if someone who's struggling to break 30 minutes, you know, and they get
PR,
it done.
PR is a personal record.
Right.
I had to learn this. Right. My kid's like, oh, PR. Yeah.
Right.
Well,
right.
What does that mean?
So I give him all the credit for that, for really building an environment where, you know, you don't have to be the fastest on the team. If you're still, you know, coming to practice, putting in the work and improving, you know, that needs to be celebrated. But it is tough, particularly high schoolers who maybe haven't run before and drop into a sport like that, because you also have kids who have been training for potentially years, and they just have an endurance base that this new runner is not going to have. So it's incredibly challenging to catch up. But we have seen kids who were struggling to break 30 minutes at the beginning of the year be down, you know, 23, 24 minutes by the end of the year. So you can, that's one fun part about being a new runner, is you can really make big improvements from race to race. Yeah. As you develop, you know, those improvements get smaller and smaller, and you're putting in more work to shave off smaller amounts of time. But when you're new, I think that keeps them interested because they're really dropping time.
Well, I think it's interesting working with like younger people because they just haven't experienced, you know, life, mm-hmm. right? And you're like, you know, as an old man at 40 and a super old man at 54, we've seen a lot, right? And we're like, yeah. Listen, I know if I put my nose to the grindstone on this, I can work through it. It's uncomfortable. It's mm-hmm. tough.
Yeah.
Been through something like this before. I can, you know, I can get through it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have a young person, they're like, I'll never get it. You're like, come on, man.
Right.
You can. I swear. You'll see. You know, some of these learning moments in life, you know, you get to be part of for the first time for some of these these kids, which is really cool. And yeah, Jay deserves a lot of credit. He's very, you know, you got to love Jay. And he now rides a bike, right? I don't know if he ever used to run with the team.
Yeah, I don't know. He often rides a bike.
He's got that. He's got to, listen, I don't blame him. He's got to be a lot of places at one time.
Yeah.
So what does it take to organize a situation for this? So what did you say the date was?
March 4th. It's a Saturday. So this has kind of been in my head for a while, probably, you know, since right after my surgery. It was just a matter of, you know, could I get back? I knew I could put it on, but I wanted to be a part of it. So could I get myself back to the point where I could really be a part of it, or be a part of it the way that I want to be? So first and foremost, you know, we want to raise money. I partnered with BB Healthcare. And we're looking to just raise awareness in the local community about colorectal cancer, signs and symptoms, the importance of screening, all that great stuff. But also, for me personally, this is sort of a test to see if I can get back to where I was before my cancer. So that's sort of my selfish reason for getting involved in this. Is, like I said, I was training for a 100-miler. I didn't have that opportunity. And on March 4th, I'm going to look to run 100 miles in 24 hours as my...
Oh, really?
Yeah, as my, you know, challenge on the day for the runathon.
And you sent me a text telling me, asking me to run.
Yeah, so...
Are you going to have people run with you at moments?
Yeah, so I'm kind of... I think our biggest group will definitely be at the start. And, you know, this, there's no set distance. There's no set time. You know, anyone can do whatever challenge suits them on the day. I will be starting at the Lewis Library and running a loop, well, what a lot of local people call the loop. So into Cape Henlopen State Park, to Gordon's Pond or Hoboth, and then back on the Junction Breakwater Trail. So the way I'm doing it, it's about 16.75 miles per loop. You do six loops, that's 100 miles, just about on the nose. There will be, hopefully, a big group at the start with me. Some people, we have some of the kids from the Striders who are younger, they'll probably be stopping at Herring Point, which is about 4.5 miles. So we're going to have shuttles from there. So if you don't feel up to running an entire loop, you could stop at Herring Point and take a shuttle back to the library. We'll also have shuttles at Gordon's Pond, which is about 9 miles from the library. That's on cool. the route. So if you want to run, feel like you can do 9 miles on the day, you could run to Grove Park and then take a shuttle back to the library.
Or so is it going to go from the library counterclockwise or clockwise?
So that would be, I guess I'd call that clockwise. So we'll leave the library, we'll cross the canal on the Lewis Drawbridge,
right?
Hop on the new section of trail there by American Legion, go into the state park, all the way through to Gordon's Pond.
Yeah.
Down, is that Henlopen Avenue there on that side of Rehoboth?
Yep.
To Grove Park, and then back on the Junction Breakwater Trail.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah. Yeah. That's, I'm trying to think for like getting picked up. Like if you're in the Rehoboth side, you know, at least get over to Gordon's Pond.
Yeah. So if we have enough interest, we could do a shuttle from Gordon's Pond. I don't have that arranged just yet, but we'll definitely have one from Herring Point, which would be a 4.5 mile run or so.
Okay.
And from Grove Park, which would be about, I think it's 8.5 miles.
Okay.
So, and we will also have aid stations available there. So if people who are moving on, who need some water or whatever it may be, they'll have access to that there.
Did you make a website for this?
I do. So I have a website, which I'll certainly share with you, and maybe it can be somehow posted in the show notes or something like that.
Absolutely.
Yep. So two things. You can donate to the cause towards one of the runners. You can donate two ways. You can just make a fixed flat donation, or you can do a per mile donation. And it's just not just me. We have others signed up. So that donation could go to anybody. Or if you'd like to run with us, you can sign up for the run-a-thon. It's free. There's no cost. We just ask that all the participants, when you sign up, you get your own fundraising page. So share that with your family and friends and look to collect your own donations for your run.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So what was this like? Has it been all right getting this thing together? Has it gone a little easier than you thought? Has it been a challenge?
I wouldn't say it's been a challenge. I've been working with BB has been great because they're going to do a lot of promotion that I just wouldn't be able to do. And they also have a lot more experience. The ladies that I'm working with running events, not specifically like this, but fundraising events. So they have a lot of great insight and they've been really helpful. And I think, with a lot of people, I'd like to see more signups. I'd like to see more donations at this point.
Sure.
But they've told me that, a lot of this is kind of last minute and we're also just kind of getting out of the holidays and people are getting back into the swing of things. So we're getting there and we definitely have some good promotion lined up to get the word out,
this is a good event to, get your, spring started, right? Run off that Christmas, the Christmas foods and snacks that we had. And I know I come out of the holidays, I'm like, I'm turning over a new leaf.
Yeah. Right.
I'm back.
Yeah. And with what we're doing with BB, we're definitely trying to cash in on that sort of New Year's resolution, thoughts.
Do you know what the donations go to? Is this like early screening?
Yeah. So specifically, BB just purchased this mobile health unit. And if you haven't seen it in the paper, I think they just got it in October. It basically looks like a tour bus that's been outfitted to drive into lesser served parts of Sussex to do, flu shots and vaccines and things like that. So we specifically are looking to start a colorectal cancer awareness campaign as on this mobile health unit. So, when they're meeting with people, if they're of the age that they should get a colonoscopy, referring them to a doctor to do so, and just raising, educating them on the disease and signs and symptoms and what they should look for. So that's specifically what we're looking to do. And I'm hoping that we're trying to have this mobile health unit there at the start on the 4th at the library so that people could potentially tour it and see it. Cool. But that's specifically what we're doing. All the funds raised are going towards that cause.
Well, I love how they have these old sayings from the old days when our parents were kids and their parents were kids. But one of them has always been, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Mm-hmm. And I just think that, that's silly. It must have like magical stuff inside of it. It's called fiber.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And one of the things as I've gotten older is I realized that I need to eat better, right? I was just laying in bed last night thinking, God, I really need to watch how I eat because it affects me. I remember as a kid, you hear, I can't eat that anymore. I'm old. And you're like, oh, whatever. I feel that. And maintenance of my digestive system is key for me, and it does go through what I eat, and apples are great. They have a great skin. It's good for the keeps things moving. Have you had to adjust your diet? Have you paid more attention to your diet? Are you super strict about your diet now? Do you blame your diet? Diet.
When I was a kid, I sort of do, and I'm not blaming myself or my parents or anything like that. It's just what we ate.
Right.
And like I said, I think that's a big reason why we're seeing this uptick is because you have these couple generations of kids who grew up with processed foods. And now I think we've educated ourselves and a lot of kids aren't, or parents aren't feeding their kids that way.
Right.
But that's how it was in the 80s and 90s. But specific to me now, post-surgery, I had to be very careful because my system was just a little, didn't work like it used to. So I had to pay attention to what I was eating because certain things would set me off. But, the doctor said it would take time, and it did, and things sort of normalized. So now I can eat whatever I want, and I try to eat healthy whenever I can. Yeah, certainly.
I had my gallbladder taken out many years. Well, I was working at, I think I worked at Bling at the time, and I went to the hospital, had pain, and eventually took the thing out. Ran a couple days later because they did it orthoscopy, whatever.
Right.
They pumped me full of air and stuck a couple probes and got it out. But and it was such a simple surgery that I was running 2 days later. But, you know, I never thought about what the removal of the gallbladder did for me. And then I started having a little bit of trouble with the way I was eating. And I was like, is this from the gallbladder? You know, I never knew. I never could figure it out. But I do know that when I'm considering how I'm eating and when I and what I'm learning for me, and especially, and you can tell me how you feel about this, is one of the things with running is that you need to eat, right?
Yeah.
It is a, you know, I was the guy that liked to eat not, or run, not because it seems like every time I'm running, I'm trying to lose some weight. Mm-hmm. I'm like always need to drop 10 pounds or something. So I'm running. And then I'm not eating.
Right.
And so I started to become sort of like a starving fat runner. And I don't think we realize it's so, it's like, in my mind, less food, the better. And the reality is you need to eat to fuel the body for the running. So do you guys talk about nutrition? Can you incorporate this? Or is it this just sort of personal you have to kind of see, keep separated from? Like, you know, like, kids, you got to eat apples every day or you're going to get colon cancer, you know?
It's, yeah.
You have to figure out how to incorporate or educate a little bit, but not, like, freak people out.
Yeah. I mean, at the high school level, we definitely talk about it when it comes to, like, the meals prior to a meet, the night before, what you should eat that day if we're going to race, you know, after school in an afternoon, when your last meal should be, you know, if you're going to have a snack, how far out from the race it needs to be. We definitely talk about that. Not so much about general healthy eating, but to speak about nutrition a little more and what you said, particularly when it gets into these longer efforts, that's one thing that I struggled with when I got into ultramarathons was eating enough during. And it's something you have to train for because, you know, your legs can feel great, but if your stomach shuts down and you can't bring in calories or you can't take in fluids, your day is going to be over.
Didn't that happen?
Yes. So when I did, I've done one 50 miler and it was, I had signed up for a race in Colorado and it ended up getting canceled due to COVID, but they had it virtually. So I did it here. It was in the summer. It was very hot. It was very humid. And the first half of it, you know, the first marathon or so, I felt great. And then shortly thereafter, my stomach just didn't want any food. It didn't want any drink. And once that happens, particularly in the heat, if you're not taking in fluids and you get dehydrated, you know, I was in pretty bad shape. I ended up finishing not in the time that I wanted to finish, but it was a rough day, but a good learning experience.
Humbling
for sure. Yeah. So there's certainly a reason why a couple reasons. You know, this event is in March because March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, first and foremost. And the March 4th date is special to me because that'll be the 2-year anniversary of my surgery. So it's a good, you know.
Well, it's also sort of cool.
Yeah.
Right. It's not blazing hot.
Well, that's the third thing is, right.
Okay. Sorry.
Right. I've learned that it's a lot easier to do these longer efforts when your body's not overheating just from the environment. So, yeah, for sure.
Well, I love running. I'm glad that you're a big runner. I'm glad you're involved in the school. I just, like I said when we started this podcast, you want to learn about yourself, go for a run. Mm-hmm. I mean, it will expose everything, you know. I used to love when I would start my runs and I'm assassinating everybody. And then I'm starting to feel bad about it. And then I'm, you know, helping them up. And then at the end, I'm making amends to everybody and making apology. It really takes me through a full spectrum of emotion of really how I'm doing, whether it's that day or in that week, you know, whether it's about inconvenience or about humility or self-centered fear or whatever it is that's going on in my life, the running will expose it. And it's a mental medication. I always say the first medication, humiliation is the first medication. It's really what pushes us early on in life. And, you know, when I think about how I started and I think about, you know, people getting into running, I always just say, just keep trying, right? You know, if there'll be a voice at some point that says maybe you should walk.
Mm-hmm.
maybe you should listen for the first few times. I like to pay attention, you know, and then you're like, well, what did I stop for, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why did I listen to the voice? You know, but you start learning about these how quickly we're willing to quit and how quickly we get mad that we quit at something that we're doing that we love. It is an interesting experience. But I always say, you know, don't get discouraged, right? I'm sure that's the message you have when you're, whether it's Nolan or the kids at the high school. Is your daughter going to be a runner? Or will we be getting her on the running game?
So she's pretty talented herself,
yeah.
But she's not, I don't think she's drawn to running in the same way that my son is. She has some other sports that are of more interest to her. But the big thing I tell her, and we tell a lot of the younger kids, is, you know, if you're a soccer player, field hockey player, lacrosse player, whatever it may be, like, having a running background is only going to make you more successful in those sports.
You know, if you're a human.
Yeah, just stick with it.
Yeah.
If field hockey or soccer, you know, is your first love, that's great. But, you know, running cross country and having that endurance base is just going to make you better at those sports.
Well, and you see a lot of guys that kind of jump back and forth through sports, like whether they're big into basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Soccer and running, I think, are at the same time. But
some
kids will do come and run just for the cross country, and then, but they're really, well, maybe, well, we don't have football at SAS. I don't know, mm-hmm. but I know that they mix the two.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we have athletes right now, we're doing winter track or indoor track. You know, we have athletes who swim and run, you mm-hmm. know, that do multiple sports at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How's the winter track going this year?
Well, it hasn't been that terribly cold, which I'm not a good cold weather guy, so I've enjoyed that part. The toughest thing, and this is my first year doing any kind of track. I don't have any track experience indoor or outdoor.
As a coach.
Or even running myself. You know, I never
ran in the winter?
Well, I ran in the winter, but not at track type distances.
Oh,
you know
right.
what I mean? So
oops.
The biggest problem here is there's nowhere to compete in the state. So, you know, there's a meet today that's in Snow Hill. You know, that doesn't get started till 2:00, I think, and usually doesn't get done till around 10 p.m. And then you got to drive back from Snow Hill, Maryland. So that's a late night for the kids, for the whole team. And we have a meet on Saturday that's in Pennsylvania. So
and usually it's not indoors. I don't know why it's called indoor track, because it is not indoors.
Well,
take a blanket or two.
At least in Delaware, they should call it winter track, because we don't have an indoor track facility. So
right.
we're driving to Maryland. We're driving to Pennsylvania. They will have what are called polar bear meets, which are during indoor track season, winter track, and are held outdoors on a traditional 400-meter track.
Okay.
So we will have some of those. And, yeah, you'll want to bundle up for that.
Well, I think I went to last year's one up at, I think it was up in Milford. And I was like, yeah, I'd love to go. I went up there. I'm like, okay. I didn't realize we're really sitting in here for a long day.
It's a long thing. Yeah.
I need like some blankets. I need a pillow. I need, you know, some gloves, a thermos, hot soup, radiant light. I don't know, whatever it is, but it was definitely chilly.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why David, because my son did not do the winter track this year. I'm like, you're not going to do winter track? He's like, well, first of all, it's not indoor. It's
right.
cold.
Right.
And it's a long day. And I go, well, okay.
Yeah.
But at the same time, try not to be like passive aggressive with him. You know, it's his choice. It's his journey.
Mm-hmm.
I know that he's loved doing track. Do you have you? How's been the response to the runathon so far? Are we starting to get some activity, or is this? Have you been on a press run right now, getting the word out? Or
yeah, we are starting to get some. You know, some more people signed up and some more donations. And I am starting. You know, I set this up and kind of, you know, released it to the world prior to the holidays, knowing that, you know, that wasn't the best time to promote because everybody's busy. So now that we're back and into the new year, we're definitely starting to promote this and want to be as much of an event, at least the start of it, as I can. I'm hopeful that maybe some of my doctors who are integral in, you know, my particular situation and my recovery would be there to speak. At the start, as I mentioned, we'd like to get this mobile health unit from BB there so that people could see it, you know, like at the library prior to the event starting. And then at that point, you know, everyone can kind of go their own way and do their own challenge. I'll be there for hopefully 24 hours straight trying to get this 100 miles in. So it's going to be a long day, but it's an adventure and I'm excited.
Do you have a backup group to help you in case you're Can't make it. Can't make it, man.
I do have.
Come on, man.
I do have pacers kind of separated out so that, you know, each time I go around, I'm not going to be by myself, and particularly not, you know, not at night, because yeah. I just nice to have some company when you're there in the dark. But, you know, I'm really training for this more like it's a 50 mile race. I've learned that I can, you know, I can do a pretty good pace over 50 miles, get those that first half done in while the going's good. And then as long as I do the kind of times that I feel I'm capable of, I can really kind of back down for the second half. So once it's nighttime and it gets cold and I'm exhausted and tired, I do not have to be moving that quick. So that's the plan.
Well, part of your problem is you're a happy guy. You know, I remember, you know, running out of Gordon's Pond at 4:50 in the morning in the sleet and the rain and the darkness.
Yeah.
And having a headlamp and just kind of at this moment where you're like seeing ice go by your glasses and I'm just like, what am I doing? You know, it's like this. But I remember this, you know, and for you know, for me, running really showed up like in some of the lower points of my life. You know, you kind of, you know, it becomes personal. Like, what am I doing in this world? And, you know, I remember just running, you know, running every day 4 or 5 miles and just at my lowest point, but really leaning on running to try to, you know, keep me clear, keep my mind clear, at least sort of keep me in the moment. When I don't have running in my life, I get a little out there. I start predicting, right, or start projecting or start reflecting, and I don't stay in the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. There's a lot of it's good mental medication.
It sure is. I had a last weekend. This has kind of been a recovery week for me, and, you know, I thought, well, just to take it easy, I'm going to go out and I'm just going to walk this loop, you know, and I was dreading it because I thought this is going to be so boring. You know, this is going to take forever. I'm going to have a hard time holding myself back and not running, but I did it. And I started really early when it was dark with a headlamp just to get some miles in the dark. And I really enjoyed it because it was so peaceful.
Is that the 17, 16 loop?
Yeah. Yeah. So
you
I did about
the whole thing.
I walked the whole thing. It took me a little over, I think maybe like 4 hours and change.
Wow.
And about half of it was in the dark, you know, with light, with the headlamp on. But I really enjoyed it. And I'll tell you one thing. I mean, I didn't think of this at the time, but, you know, walking uses different muscles. I was surprised at how sore I was just for walking 16 miles.
Well, I think it's a little bit more muscle, right? I think, you know, running, you got some what's the word? You know,
a little momentum. Yeah. Or just different parts of your leg. So it was good. And I should probably do some more of it just as part of my training.
Well, and I think that's a great message because I think a lot of people are like, well, shit, if I can't run a marathon, I'm not running. Right. Or if I can't run a 5K, why bother?
No.
And first of all, it's personal. It is a journey. I do believe that I can imagine what an amazing walk that would be, 17 miles, 4 hours. I mean, and some of the greatest, I mean, we live in an amazing, that loop is an amazing loop.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the most, I take pictures when I was doing a lot of running over on the Junction Breakwater Trail, and people would be like, this looks like Japan.
Mm-hmm.
No, Delaware.
Yeah.
You know, it's right here. It's just, you know, if you're standing in when the sun comes up and that some of that sideways light makes everybody look like an amazing photographer.
Yeah.
It's like, it's, but, you know, we have some great things to see, but, you know, I think it's, you know, to, you know, make your, when you, if you're going to start running, you're going to get into it, just have little short goals, you know.
Yeah.
When I started running, I was like, I just want to get to the corner. First, I just wanted to quit smoking, right? I love the idea of running more than I love the idea of smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started running, I really loved that. And I loved, you know, how my shoulders popped back a little bit more. My posture got a little stronger. My abs got a little tighter.
Mm-hmm.
I started to feel a little bit better about myself. And I was like, I am enjoying this. But I was like, just let me run to the corner and then I'll walk the rest of it.
Yeah.
Let me just get past the corner and another 20 feet and then I'll walk the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, I started getting stronger.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I'm like really running.
Yeah.
And you can tell me if this is true. I mean, if they say if you want to run a 100-mile marathon, you should be able to run at least 50 of it.
Well, yeah.
And you should be able to do the other 50.
Yeah. It's going to be hard no matter who you are. But yeah, I guess I would agree with that you should be able to do half of it.
If you can run 50, you should be able to do 100, right?
Yeah, it's a little different than like marathon training. So most people, when they train for a marathon, they might get 20, 22. Like, I'm not going to go out and run 80 miles. It's just too much on your body.
It's too much.
But 50, you know, I think so. If you want to do 100, you should be able to do 50.
So how do you do that? How do you protect yourself? Because I know for myself, I try to run quietly, right? I try to be very light.
Mm-hmm.
I try to ding, ding, ding. You know, I'm not running like a rhinoceros. I had a client the other day. She goes, I'm a heavy runner.
Yeah.
I go, yeah. Well, so what do you try to do? How do you try to protect yourself? Because listen, a lot of running, man, and what do people always tell you? Oh, your knees. Knees are going to go bad.
Mm-hmm.
How are your knees?
Right now, I'm a little banged up, to be honest. Uh-oh. But it's it's a planned recovery period, so I'm okay with that. And I have kind of been struggling with, you know, do I kind of train through these little aches and pains? Or do I just take a couple weeks off and make sure I'm fresh? And I've kind of, although it's tough, I've decided that that's probably the better approach because I want to be healthy on the 4th. You know, I don't want to get there banged up. I feel like my endurance base is in a good enough spot right now. As long as I can maintain that, I just want to make sure that I'm healthy. But specifically about the running or the form, you know, I think at these longer distances, it's all about being efficient. So I'm trying to go kind of as fast as I can, but also keeping my heart rate in a pretty low spot. So the majority of the running that I do in training is low heart rate. I'm not going very fast, usually between 9 or 10 minute miles, but trying to keep my heart rate in a place that, you know, I can do that type of effort for a long period of time.
Do you have the Apple Watch?
I do. I have an Apple Watch. I typically train with a Garmin. But
well,
yeah.
I just saw they've created this new, I mean, this whole zone thing for on the Apple Watch now. Mm-hmm. You can run in the zone. I just saw it. I was like, oh, I need to run in the zone.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, everybody's different. And I think that, you know, when you do get to a point where you've done a lot of running and, you know, you look at a guy like a David Goggins, right, who is just this, who's going to show up? You know, it's just crazy, mm-hmm. you know, super motivation, really inspiring people. But, you know, for a guy like me, I can almost sometimes be turned off by, you know, a guy that needs to run 100 miles in the dark, you know, before everything gets going. It's like, I appreciate the inspiration, but at the same time, I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Right?
And so it's nice to find people like yourself doing shorter things, but still being, you know, playing a role in the running world, you know, because you can also push people out. And I think it's good to hear that you say, hey, man, I'm a little banged up. I know I need to take some time off, a week or something, and rest.
Yeah.
You know, because we can push ourselves. We do. I know when I was at my highest point of running, I was a little crazy. Like, mm-hmm. I was running injured. I had a high ankle sprain.
Mm-hmm.
One of my knees, unfortunately, this part I used to run, it was kind of a, you know, like a shoulder, you know, the road kind of flared off. And so I was running on an angle and got real weird. But I kept running and I'm like, I'm not quitting. And definitely running through an injury I shouldn't have probably been. So, you know, I think it's important when we evaluate ourselves and say, hey, I'm not feeling good, that we can say, I need to take a week off, you know.
It's tough to do, but it's the best thing for you.
Yeah, in the end, it's definitely the best. All right, well, listen, so what's, one more time, let's go through it. It's March 8th?
March 4th.
March 4th.
The Blue Ribbon Runathon.
Blue Ribbon Runathon.
Yes, so, and we are saying runathon, but just to put this out there, we do have folks who are, you know, like we talked about, just want to walk a loop, you know, because how much of an adventure would that be if you're not used to that,
maybe
you know, that type of
distance? Funathon.
A funathon, yeah. So you can go to our website, you can make a donation, you can to the cause, to any of our runners who are participating, or if you'd like to sign up and start with us, you're more than welcome to. There's no cost to sign up. We just ask that you collect some donations for your own adventure.
What time is it going to be on March 4th?
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
Nice. And it's at the library?
We're starting at the Lewis Library.
Lewis Library. Very mm-hmm. good. And website?
Website is, it's on, if you've signed up for a 5K here locally, you've probably been to the Run Sign Up website. So if you go to Run Sign Up and search for the Blue Ribbon Runathon, you'll find it.
Oh, okay. So it's part of a, is that how it works when you want to start a, organize a run? There's somebody has an organization that allows you to.
Yeah, so it's a platform where, okay, like the companies that put on 5Ks around here, I think they they use that service. So if you've signed up for a 5K, you probably have an account already. So if you go to Run Sign Up and just search for the event, search for the Blue Ribbon Runathon, you'll find it.
Very cool. So that's March 4th, 8 a.m., Lewis Library. I forget the runathon. What was it?
Where the Blue Ribbon.
Not the Blue Ribbon, where you can find it. We'll put it all. Are you doing an Instagram with this, or are you just...
No, I haven't yet.
Mm-mm. Okay. Well, very good. Well, listen, Gavin Furlong, you are an amazing guy, and we appreciate you coming on the podcast. And, you know, thanks for letting me use this room, too.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, Tom, and spreading the word. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. And anytime you want to come back, you know. And thank you for doing this, because I've mentioned it to you, and you're like, I don't know. So I know this is not a huge deal, but I know it's a little... I hope it wasn't didn't make you as nervous as you thought.
No, this has been great, and this cause is very important to me, and I appreciate your help getting the word out.
I love it. All right, well, listen, we'll post some stuff in the notes, and come run with us.
Sounds great. Thank you. All right, brother. Bye. Appreciate it.